typically means to bring something into existence which didn't exist before, to do something new. The word of it that connotes creativity. The third word of the Torah is Elohim, or Elohim, which is the name of God. It is the only name of God which is mentioned in the first chapter, I guess I'm tight, of the Torah. God is known by Elohim. Elohim connotes a God of judgment. God who is, if you will, rational, hold things at a distance, a little bit more cold, if you will, a more removed God. The word Elohim in Hebrew actually means judge. So it's God is judge. Shamayim, heavens. Eretz is earth. The next words I want to look at, so the first two, the Haaretz, the earth. Haita tov avohu, it was formless and void, wild and waste. The Choshech, and darkness, apnei tahom, on the face of the deep. The Ruach Elohim, there it is again, the wind of God, God known as Elohim. Merachefet al pnei amayim, it hovers over the face of the waters. You see the connection between the word Shamayim and Mayim? There are the heavenly waters, and what Rachel was talking about before, that in day two, God separates between the heavenly waters and the lower waters. The lower waters are Mayim. The upper waters are Shamayim. Okay, the third verse. Now, this is very important. This is one of the reasons I'm doing this. The first word in the third verse is the word Vayomer. What does it mean? And he said, as we said, God uttered, God made 10 utterances to create the world. Now, I want to just dissect the word with you. This is not something we're always going to do. We don't have time always. But I think it's very valuable to know that the Torah is a linked kind of document. It's not written like English, where you have clear sentence breaks. In the Torah, there's a lot of and. Clauses are strung together by and. And if you know how to recognize a verb in the Torah, it can help you in your translations a lot. So I'm going to show you what it means. So the word Vayomer, and he said, Va, the Vav, means and. You know this letter? It's the letter Vav.
Let me ask a question.
Hold on a second.
Okay.
What does it look like? Like a one. Good. I'll make it a little more. Might hook it around like that. See what it is? It doesn't have quite that hook, but it's supposed to represent a hook. You take it and you hook it in. That's why it means and. Because when you... The word itself, Vav, means hook. And it's written like a hook. Because when you take the word and, I bought apples and oranges. You're taking apples and hooking them together with oranges. The very nature of Hebrew and the words and the letters are meant to teach you what's going on. So the Vav means and. It hooks together the phrases. Vayomer, so the Yud is he. And the root are the three last letters. Right, these three letters. Whoa. These three letters are the root. I can't write. Right? And he said. Every verb is like that. Okay? So look, we're going to just do it. Vayomer Elohim. And God said, let there be light. And there was light. You see it? Vayihi. Instead of and he said, it's the same. You see how it's the same? Vayomer, Vayihi. And it was. Next one. Vayar Elohim. What's Vayar? And he... saw. You hear it's the same. Vayomer, Vayar, Vayhi. And God saw the light, that it was good. Vayavdel. And he made Havdalah. Separated. Vayavdel. You see, it's always the same. Vayomer, Vayar, Vayhi, Vayavdel. Once you recognize it, you'll know where all the verbs are. Okay?
Are these not, is this just a technical question? Is this not like... I mean, it's different from modern Hebrew.
It's different than modern Hebrew. Biblical Hebrew.
The future tense means the past tense. Is that right?
Yeah, you cannot use modern Hebrew. I mean, you can. Some of the vocabulary is the same, but when I took biblical Hebrew in graduate school, so what they used to do is give us English sentences. They give us English paragraphs, and you'd say, "Okay, now write this in the words of the Torah." And it was like so hard. Like you had to learn a whole new way of writing. Yeah, exactly, kind of. So verse 5, Vayikra, and he called. God called the light day, and he called the darkness night. Yes, Jason.
I was just wondering, because maybe it's, I don't have knowledge of Hebrew, but sometimes they have different vowels under the above. Like, you know what I'm saying? What is...
Yeah,
the source of that.
So hold on for a second. I'm actually going to talk about it in a few minutes, okay?
Okay,
so I wanted to do the first day with you. Now I want to take a step back. We've done the first day. We've talked about it a little bit. We know that God is going to go on to create the world in 6 days. So what's he going to create on day two? Day two is the weirdest day. Nobody knows what to do with day two. What does he create on day two, Rachel? You said it before.
He separates the heavens from earth.
And what does he create? It is in here, but I didn't give it to you in English.
It's like the firmament.
The firmament.
Oh, yeah.
Because everybody knows what a firmament is.
When I read that.
Sure, I've got one in my back pocket. Here's the firmament. I have no idea what a firmament is. I still don't know what a firmament is.
No, it was.
What's a firmament?
Like a separation.
It's a hair product. Does anybody know what a firmament is?
A separation.
It comes from the word firm. That much I know. I have no idea what a
firmament
is.
What's the word in Hebrew?
Rakia. Which is the word used in modern Hebrew for the sky. God created the atmosphere, possibly.
Space.
I have no idea. He created something in day two. I know when my kids come home from school, on day two, there's a picture of like heavens and earth and something like that. I don't know what they tell them exactly they created. I'm sure they don't tell the kids firmament. I have no idea. What?
My whole staff is discussing this today because the whole school is teaching creation and no one knows
what happened on day two. I don't know. He separated the upper waters from the lower waters. One was called heaven and one was called earth. That's true. That's 100% true. Marissa, will you get Chumash for us now? Thank you. Yeah, for all of you. Could, well, you know what? Tanya, why don't you help her?
Yeah,
between the two of you. So, I mean, I don't know what it is, but we already know that heavens and earth theoretically existed in day one. They're talked about in day one. I don't know what happens in day two. I'll tell you something very interesting about day two. I want you to pay attention to this fact. After every day, when God finished his work, his quote-unquote work, what does he do?
He says it's good.
He enjoys some element. He appreciates. I'll take one of those two. He appreciates what he has done. Is there any day when it does not say that God saw what he had done and saw that it was good? Which one?
Second.
Day two. Day two. I don't want to say that God didn't like what he did, but he did not feel that what he did on day two deserved the appellation of goodness. Okay, who's going to read for us? Page, skip the introduction. Page 5, verse 6. Go ahead, Davida.
Okay. God said, let there be a firmament in the midst of the waters, and let it separate between water and water. So God made the firmament and separated between the waters which were beneath the firmament and the waters which were above the firmament. And it was so. God called the firmament heaven. And there was evening and there was morning, a second day.
Before we go on to the third day, which we're going to do in 1 second, I want you just to know that the Stone Chumash, very sneakily, it's a great book, just so you know, they translate according to Rashi. It is not a pure translation. There is no such thing. But they specifically, it's hidden somewhere in the introduction, they mention it in that footnote or something, that they translate according to Rashi's interpretation. So they play around sometimes. I'll point it out. I'll call them out. Okay. Go ahead. Day three, Davida.
God said, let the waters beneath the heaven be gathered into one area and let the dry land appear. And it was so. God called to the dry land earth, and to the gathering of waters he called seas. And God saw that it was good.
Now, did God create anything? He just moved stuff around. See what I mean? It's interesting. It's not any different than day two. That's why there's a second part. Keep going.
God said, let the earth sprout vegetation, herbage yield its seed, fruit trees yielding fruit, each after its kind, containing its own seed on the earth. And it was so. And the earth brought forth vegetation, herbage yielding seed after its kind, and trees yielding fruit, each containing its seed after its kind. And God saw that it was good. And there was evening and there was morning, a third day.
How many times did God see that it was good on the third day? Twice.
Makes up for the second day not having it.
It makes up for the second day. But is that really fair? My kids would be like, no fair! The third day gets two and I get none! done, right? It says twice in the third day. Now, putting aside the problem here, that's interesting that day two is like the poor orphan day of creation. I will tell you that this is the source for a Jewish tradition, no longer out there, but something to think about. Might be cheaper on the catering halls to get married on Tuesday. They call it Pa'amayim Ki Tov. Tuesday is the only day of creation in which it says that God saw it was good twice. One for the husband and one for the wife. It was such a tradition, Tuesdays.
Do you know, I just had somebody, my sister's friends, who got married on Tuesday, and everybody's like, why is she getting married on Tuesday?
Well, I'm going to show you there are other reasons to get married on other days, but Tuesday is a great day to get married. It's the only day of creation that was double good. Double your pleasure. It's a perfect time for a couple to get married. Putting it out there, okay?
Good to know.
Fourth day.
Question.
Yeah. Oh, I was just whispering to her my question, which was, would Monday be the second day? Because Sunday is the first day after Shabbat, and then Monday is the second day?
Yeah, third day is Tuesday.
Oh, I see. That's
Sunday, right. Monday, gotcha. Tuesday. Yeah, gotcha. Tuesday, fine. Okay, onwards.
God said, let there be luminaries in the firmament of the heaven to separate between the day and the night. And they shall serve as signs and for festivals and for days and years. And they shall serve as luminaries in the firmament of the heaven to shine upon the earth.
So we have there the source for what we call the lunar solar calendar. Like the sun and the moon are both relevant to our calendar. We do the months by the moon and the years by the sun. Very complicated for us.
The days by the moon.
Yes. So, but I'm saying that's why we add an extra month, so that Passover is always in the spring, but our months are lunar months, and, you know, it makes us a very complicated people. Okay.
Rabbi, can I ask a question just about the phrasing here? So they talk about the firmament of the heaven, and then I know up in the second day he's called the firmament heaven.
I have this problem too.
So is there a teaching that there's something above the heavens?
He says that there's water above the firmament of the heavens.
There is. In a lot of the old prayers, and we even have this in some of our prayers in the prayer book, they talk about Shemei HaShamayim, the heaven of the heavens. And so if the Rakia, if the firmament is like heaven, there is something below it and something above it, which is called the Shemei HaShamayim. We call God the God of the heaven of heavens. And in fact, in Judaism, you know, you're familiar with this phrase, seventh heaven? It's like when you, I don't know, like we use it for like in the most derivative way, like seventh heaven is when you, how do we use seventh heaven? Like it's cloud nine. Cloud nine, I don't know where that comes from. I have to look that up. But seventh heaven is like euphoria, but it's usually used in a romantic context for some reason. Anyway, seventh heaven is a Jewish concept. There's a tradition that there are seven levels of heaven. Each has their own. Has its own name and its own identity, and the seventh heaven is where God's throne sits. So it's not, you know, it's actually kind of a very mystical idea that we've totally destroyed. Keep going. So,
where did I leave off? And God made the two luminaries, the greater luminary to dominate the day, and the lesser luminary to dominate the night and the stars. And God set them in the firmament of the heaven to give a light upon the earth, to dominate by day and by night, and to separate between the light and the darkness. And God saw that it was good, and there was evening and there was morning, a fourth day.
Now there's a lot to talk about here from the physics perspective, which we are not going to do. How did God create the earth? Is he talking about, is there a Big Bang? It doesn't really mention a Big Bang. Is the Big Bang in Bereshit? Is it here? What's the relationship between the sun and the moon and the stars? And does the Bible realize that the stars are suns? And there's lots of questions here. If you're interested in this, I can refer you to a number of excellent books by contemporary Jewish authors that are sort of working on reconciling tradition and the Torah. And there's a lot of interesting stuff to say about it. Some of it is right, and some of it's wrong, some of it's interesting. I don't know. We're not going to deal with it. Sorry. But I would say this. There is nothing that says that in Jewish tradition that there couldn't have been a Big Bang. A Big Bang is certainly reconcilable with the Torah and Jewish tradition, and so are a number of other potential theories. I don't know that the Torah takes a stand on these matters. The Torah is not as interested in it as it is in the relationship of God to the world. Now, it bothers people because if the Torah says something that is like demonstrably false, so that bothers us. How can you rely on this book for religious teachings if it's got the physics wrong? But there's no way to know even, a lot of people who are saying that, the physics is wrong are reading it in English, which is just really a lousy way to make any kind of judgment about what the Torah is really saying. And even if they could read the Hebrew, there are six different interpretations of it. Which one are they holding by? Which one do they think is the one that the Torah got wrong? So there's, it's really much more complicated than anybody that's kind of snarky about like writing in their block, oh, the Torah doesn't know anything about physics, probably hasn't studied that much Torah. So for another class, another class, we'll deal with it. But if you are interested in, I will, God willing, send out to you an email a couple of good sources to look into it. And one of the things that we might be interested in, Rabbi Jonathan Sacks, who's going to be here this Shabbat, who is the chief rabbi of the UK. So he actually just came out with a book in 2011 on religion and science, and I have not seen it yet, but I'm willing to bet that there are matters like this that are discussed there. Okay, let's do fifth day. How much time do we have? Not much. Okay. You want to keep reading for us?
Sure.
Okay.
God said, let the waters teem with teeming living creatures and fowl that fly above the earth and across the expanse of the heavens. And God created the great sea giants and every living...
What are the sea giants? No.
Oh.
What are the great... Did you do that in Hebrew school? Did you write great... Did you have great sea giants? And if you had put great sea giants, if you put the Loch Ness Monster in your Hebrew school drawing, they probably would have had an emergency meeting with your parents. What are the great sea giants?
Maybe whales.
Did you know they were part of this? Well, it could have... Yeah, maybe.
This one says monsters.
So that one says monsters? Anybody... Oh, if we had other translations. There's about eight different translations.
The one I'm reading at home says monsters.
I will tell you this. I will tell you this. When Moses throws his staff down on the ground, and it turns into a...
snake?
Well, you're reading the translation. This is what it turns into.
A great monster?
Not a great one, but a regular one, I guess. I don't know what it means. Here it says, Taninim Hagdolim, the great Taninim. There, it just says that he threw his staff down on the ground and it turned into a Tanin. But it's the same creature. You know what Tanin is in modern Hebrew? Crocodile. So it seems aquatic. Some people say that it's Leviathan, which is part of the Jewish tradition. Leviathan, the great sea monster. I don't know what it is, but it's certainly, there's so many interesting things to pursue, and it's a kind of creation. Some of them we may just have never noticed before as we sort of trip along. So let's keep going.
And God created the great sea giants and every living being that creeps, with which the waters teemed after their kinds, and all winged fowl of every kind. And God saw that it was good.
Now here's something new. Pay attention. Go ahead.
God blessed them, saying, be fruitful and multiply, and fill the waters and the seas, but the fowl shall increase on the earth.
And there was evening.
And there was evening, and there was morning, a fifth day.
What's new in this day?
Bless them.
God blesses the animals, and he says, be fruitful and multiply to the fishes. Therefore, there is a tradition on the fifth day for people to get married, because of the blessing of be fruitful and multiply that was given to the fishes. And of course, when people get married, what else do we want for them to be fruitful and multiply as well? We haven't even, the wedding's not even over yet, and we're talking about the kids. But there is such a tradition on the fifth day for people to get married because of the blessing, the first blessing of creation, be fruitful and multiply. Okay,
there's
good.
A tradition not to get married on Monday when it wasn't Sukkot.
There is a tradition actually not, pretty much not to get married on Monday. Monday's like the worst day to get married.
It's just like saying, jinxed, I mean, because it doesn't say... It
no, there are lots of reasons.
Thursday.
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 So it's really Wednesday night. It's really Wednesday night is the marriage time. Because, and there are various reasons. For, I mean, this is one of the reasons for it, but another reason is the market days were Monday and Thursday. So if there was any problem with the wedding or what, for various kinds of problems, there was Thursday was a day when you would come into town and the court sat and you could deal with any issues that came up. So, okay, sixth day.
God said, let the earth bring forth living creatures, each according to its kind, cattle and creeping things, and beasts of the land, each according to its kind. And it was so. God made the beasts of the earth according to its kind, and the cattle according to its kind, and every creeping thing, and every creeping being of the ground according to its kind. And God saw that it was good.
Good. Page 9.
And God said, let us make man in our image, and after our likeness. They shall rule over the fish of the sea, the birds of the sky, and over the cattle, the whole earth, and every creeping thing that creeps upon the earth. So God created man in his image, and the image of God he created him. Male and female he created them.
Now, it is interesting that human beings are created on the same day as the animals, which makes it sound like we're some kind of an extension of the animal kingdom. On the other hand, this verse, God created man in his image, in the image of God he created him, male and female he created them, is clearly gives a unique status to human beings. But are we saying we are animals, just special animals? Or is there some other reason why we were created on the same day as animals? Yeah.
Question for you. So, says that God said, let us make man in our image. So, like, who's the us?
Okay, so that's a whole another class that we could spend a whole the whole fellowship on this parsha. But yes, the let us make man is a major issue. In a nutshell, according to rabbinic tradition, God was speaking to the angels. Rashi learns a moral lesson from this, that actually a lesson that's really good for professionals and people who have people that work for them. He says that it's important to empower the people who work for you. And so you should solicit people's opinions even though they are lower down than you, and you should include them in the process of doing things. And so God says to them, let us make man. He says to the angels, come help me out. I'd like your input and advice on the creation of human beings. Not because he needed it, but as a way of empowering creation and showing that the way in which to be a creator is not to be haughty, but to enable those around you. That's how Rashi learns it. But it is a great... What? So the angels are not mentioned to be creating. You know when they say angels were created? Day two. Hidden there. Okay.
Day two's a mess.
Day two's a mess. Okay. I'll just tell you one other thing about this verse, one of my favorite interpretations of this verse. Notice there is a redundancy in verse 27. So God created man in his image. They put a little capital H there, in case you were wondering whose image it was. In the image of God, he created him. Anybody watch Monty Python? You know, the holy hand grenade? You know, like, it seems very repetitious. He just said he created man in his image, and then it says in the image of God, he created him. Why that absolute, unnecessary repetition? So one interpretation of it is that the his image, there are two different images here. So God created man in his image should be a lowercase h. Every human being is created unique. God created every man in their own image. There are no two people that are alike. But though each individual human being is unique, they are all created in the image of God. And male and female, he created them. He did not create human beings to be alone, but to be social creatures, to be part of a community. In other words, this verse very, very nicely suggests the three kinds of relationship a person needs to have. Relationship between a person and themselves. Relationship between a person and God. And relationship between a person and other people. So God created man in his own image, a relationship to a person, to himself. Every person has to recognize their own uniqueness. In the image of God, he created him because we have a relationship to God. Male and female, he created him because we need to relate to each other. All right, let's finish it up.
God blessed them, and God said to them, be fruitful and multiply, fill the earth and subdue it, and rule over the fish of the sea, the bird of the sky, and every living thing that moves on the earth.
Okay, so we could have a tradition of getting married on Friday, because after all, God blesses the human beings to be fruitful and to multiply. What's the problem getting married on Friday?
Getting
close to Shabbos, which most of the time meant it was not a popular day to get married. You could do it Thursday night. However, in Europe in the 19th century, it became very popular to get married on Friday. Who can tell me why? They were very poor, and they did not have enough money to spend on both a wedding feast and a Shabbat meal. So they would have the weddings on Friday afternoon, and the wedding would slide right into Shabbos, and the banquet would be both Friday night dinner and also a wedding. Sounds nice to me.
Well, also, if you do that, then you also have, like, the holiness of Shabbat on your wedding.
Yeah. Something special about that.
You have all your family there, I guess.
Yes! It's nice, and you can feed the whole community for Shabbat. It's like having him, it's like, you know, you should do it at MGE. All right. I'm all about getting married. Okay, right. So finish. Keep going. Verse 31.
All right. No, 29.
No, sorry, 29, yeah.
God said, behold, I have given to you all herbage yielding seed that is on the surface of the entire earth, and every tree that has seed yielding fruit, and it shall be yours for food.
Okay, so what are they supposed to eat?
All the fruit and trees.
So Adam in the Garden of Eden and Eve and the first man created were vegetarians, for sure. Vegetarians love the first chapter of the Bible. Human beings clearly were vegetarians. We'll see next week. It's clearly not until after the flood that human beings began to eat meat. Interesting. Let's keep going.
And to every beast of the earth, to every bird of the sky, and to everything that moves on the earth, within which there is a living soul, every green herb is for food.
The animals were vegetarians too.
And it was so. And God saw all that he had made, and behold, it was very good. And there was evening, and there was morning, the sixth day.
Notice it says the sixth day. The sixth day, not sixth day. What does it say in all the other ones? That's right. It adds the definite article, the sixth day. What does it mean? It says the sixth day. It's referring to another sixth day also. Not just this sixth day. There's another sixth day. What sixth day could it be referring to? Sorry?
It said, remember you said Bereshit created six.
True. Everything that in the beginning of the Torah has echoes later in the Torah. So we also have a tradition that just as the world was created on Sunday morning and then consummated on Friday afternoon, right before Shabbat, so too the Torah, the Jewish people arrived at the desert of Sinai on Sunday, and they were given the Torah on Shabbat, as Shabbat entered. So the sixth day says that, according to rabbinic tradition, that this Friday was set aside to be matching to the Friday on which the Torah was given. The way the Talmud says it is, I created the world, but if the Jewish people don't accept the Torah, I will return it to Tohu Vavohu, nothing formless and void. The sixth day, both the day of creation and the day of the giving of the Torah. And then we go right into Shabbat. Now, we're not going to do Shabbat now, but I want to ask you, when did Adam and Eve sin?
Right before Shabbat.
They didn't have much time in the Garden of Eden, did they? According to this. They never made it even through one Shabbat. According to the Jewish tradition, had they made it through that first Shabbat, the whole world would have been different. All they have to do is make it to Shabbat. Sometimes Friday afternoon, you just gotta make it to Shabbat. If you make it to Shabbat, everything will be great. But hold on, you know? If they had just held on until Shabbat, the whole world would be different. Alright. We have 5 minutes left. I'm gonna use all of my time because I have so much to tell you. I wanted to just talk about Torah scrolls for a few minutes. So if you turn to the next page here. On the right-hand side, we have, and this is Shemot. You should not throw this away, because it has God's name in it. I have here the way it appears in the Torah, although with all of the markings. It's called a tikkun. This is how, when you're practicing to read the Torah in synagogue, this is how you do it. It actually has two columns. One looks like this, and one looks like this. So you practice with all the vowels, and then by the time you get up to read, you're supposed to know what the vowels. Okay? So I have the 6 days of creation. It actually goes only into the beginning of the sixth day, but I wanted you to see how it looks. Do you see here something that you cannot get from the stone Chumash for all of its glory? It just doesn't show it to you. You see how it's divided? Each day of creation is its own paragraph. See it? Am I making sense? Give me a sign. You see it. Every day of creation. Now, I want to tell you what this is called. I have a little bit, you can ask last year's fellows, I have a little bit of mishigas about this, which you will decide whether or not you want to share with me or not. Every paragraph in the Torah is called a... Parasha or Parsha. This is a Parsha. Every paragraph, every day of creation is its own Parsha. Now, you can use the word Parsha in a lot of different ways. I use it sometimes just to talk about, you know, like, well, what's the Parsha? Like, tell me the story. You know? So, every paragraph here is a Parsha. What then do we call the Torah portion of the week, since the Torah portion of the week is not just one of these paragraphs? passive seder. It means the orders of the reading. Because as you know, so we just finished it, we read the entire Torah every year in order. So every week is its own sidrah. There are 54 sidrah, which makes things complicated because how many weeks of the year are there? 52. How does it work out?
Double up.
Sometimes yeah. We double up. In fact, it's going to our tremendous detriment in fellowship because it's as if we didn't have enough work to do just to learn one whole parsha. Over the course of the next several months, we have three double parshas. So we are going to have to... move. Sometimes we have double parshas. Sometimes, like when a holiday falls over Shabbat, you don't read the regular sidra, you read them for the holiday. So it all works out in the end of the day, so that every year we finish it. Yeah?
I've also heard that a sentence in the Torah is called a suk.
Yeah, we're going to come back to that.
Okay?
So let's come back to that. I want to now go down to the bottom of the page. You see the bottom of the page? This is how a Torah scroll looks. Anybody looked in a Torah scroll before? Raise your hand if you've actually looked in a Torah scroll. Okay, it's one of the things the Hebrew school does well. They let you look in Torah scrolls. I don't actually like it when... Have you ever seen when they unroll them all the way around the room?
Yeah.
I really don't like that. I'm sorry. Yeah, it's really not nice. It's not respectful to the Torah scroll. Similarly, why I don't like... what's the cadaver displays that they do?
Oh, yeah, bodies.
Bodies. Totally not Jewish. I refuse to go see it. Okay. This is what the Torah looks like. No vowels, no sentence markings. Now, we have a tradition about this. The tradition, there's nothing in the Torah text except for the letters and the parchment. This is the tradition of black fire on white fire. That the Torah was given fiery Torah. The black fire is the letters. The white fire is the parchment. Actually a tradition that you can read the Torah in two ways. That you can read the Torah using the foreground, or like Esher, you can read the background too. The way the letters are formed, they're sometimes formed in mirror image to other letters. We also have the tradition that you can rearrange the letters of the Torah to form other words, that there's more than one way to read the Torah. We don't do it this way, but mystically, that you can rearrange the letters of the Torah to form the names of God, or to tell a different story. There's more than one meaning hidden in the words of the Torah. So there isn't anything. There's no vowels, no markings, no anything. It's just the letters of the Torah. Do you see the letters of the Torah have crowns? Mm-hmm. These are called the tagin, or the crowns of the Torah. And the tradition has it was that Rabbi Akiva could interpret the meanings of all the crowns of the Torah. You ever notice in the synagogue, sometimes they... There are two different kinds of Torah scrolls. Ashkenazi Torah scrolls have two rollers, right? They call those the Atzei Chaim, the trees of life, because it is a tree of life to go to grab a hold of it, right? So you grab a hold of the Torah by the two rollers, and they put the covering on it, and then some places they put the crown on top, the crown of Torah. Similar to the letters here, they put a crown on top because it's the Keter Torah, it's the crown of Torah. In the Sephardic tradition, they have the children do that because they want them to aspire to the crown of Torah. So when they take the Torah out of the ark, Sephardic Torahs are they're like cylinders. You ever seen them? They're like closed cylinders. You grab it like this and you open them like this. They don't. The Sephardim read the Torah, they stand it up and you read it like this. Ashkenazim lay it down and read it. It's just different, I don't know. So they have the children, they pick the children up and they put the crowns on the Torah and they take it out of the ark, which is a very beautiful custom. Because those are the crowns, the crown of Torah. The crown of priesthood, you can only have if you're a Kohen. The crown of kingship, you can only have if you're a descendant of David. But the crown of Torah is available to everybody. Okay, notice here. Just two more minutes and I will stop hurling information at you. That there is another kind of parsha break. Do you see the first line here? Okay, when you're writing on a word processor, you know clearly that you can make a break in two ways. You can hit return, or you can hit tab. In the Torah, there are similarly two breaks. There is a carriage return, that's called an open parsha, and there is a tab, which is called a closed parsha. So if you just take a look on page know what? They don't even tell you here. I take it back. Sorry. If you go back one page in your packets instead, just go back one page in your packets. You see the P at the very bottom? And there was evening and there was morning one day? That P is supposed to stand for Pitucha, which means an open parsha. Character turn. That's what it's doing there. It took out the other ones. So you have two kinds of parshas. Open parshiot and closed parshiot. And the Torah reading itself, one whole Torah reading, is called a sidra. And I just want to show you one other thing and then we will call it a day. Every letter in the Torah is important. So I brought for you one letter. Just the letter Aleph. The lonely letter Aleph. You see the 14 lines coming out of letter Aleph? This is actually from a book instructing scribes how to write a Torah. There are 14 separate requirements in order to write a kosher Aleph. Each one of these goes to a line. And remember, writing with a quill, 14 separate items have to be done correctly in order to create a proper Aleph. Because the form of the letter is sacred. Now, I'll tell you one thing about Aleph. You want to hear one mystical insight into the letter Aleph. What is the value, gematria, of the letter Aleph?
One.
One. It's the first letter. It's A. It's one. It also stands for God, because one is Hashem in the heavens and the earth. Right? So it is one. Oh, by the way, the word Eleph,
1,000,
1,000. Right, but it's the same. The word aluf. Anyone know what the word aluf means? The champion, the strongest one, referring to God. Aleph, number one. Notice that in order to make an aleph, you have to connect three other letters. What are the three other letters that are made in the aleph?
Yud
on top. Yud on bottom. It's also a yud. I know it has a little longer leg.
And
above. Yud has a gematria of
10.
It's the 10th letter. Plus Yud is 20. Plus Vav, what's the gematria of the letter Vav?
5.
6.
So what's the gematria of the letter Aleph?
26.
God's ineffable name, Yud Hey Vav Hey, Yahweh, Yud Hey Vav Hey, has the gematria of 26. And so encoded into the letter Aleph itself is the hint that it refers to God, not just because He is one in the heavens and the earth, but because it comes to it as well. Moreover, it says something else. The Yud on top is the Yud that is in heaven. The Yud on the bottom is the Yud on earth. Dividing between them is the
firmament.
What we learn from the letter Aleph is that God wants to have a relationship to connect through the division between heaven and earth, from the yud on top to the yud on the bottom. There's always, from the very beginning of the Hebrew alphabet, meant to be a connection, a unification between that which is in heaven and that which is in earth. And with that thought for today, I will leave you. We didn't get through everything. Let's pick up.
Aleph also, I might be wrong, the first letter of the Ten Commandments, and that's why Bereishit begins with the bet. The second letter is Yud.
So the letter Aleph is jealous. Why did the bet get to begin the Torah?
But I also heard because if you make it into a three-dimensional letter, then it's the tent of Abraham, and so you're connecting to like the angels did it into Judaism.
Fascinating.
Yeah,
I never heard that before. I'm not even sure I understand it. Make it three dimensional. So you stand it up, and then it has like an opening.
It's the closest letter to being a tent.
Oh, hell. The letter of tent begins with an O. Very interesting. It is actually an interesting question. Why should the Torah begin with that?
Because the tent begins with an O.
But why shouldn't the Torah begin with that? Maybe the Ten Commandments could begin with that.
It all goes back to the sixth day.
Oh, that's right. There's much to learn. Yeah. Anyway, it's so nice to have you all here. This is the beginning of a great journey. And we'll see you tomorrow night. Tomorrow night, everybody, Feldman is teaching 7.
Yay!
And, I'm also going to introduce you tomorrow night to Rabbi Adam Dubin, who is going to be he's like our TA. He's going to be grading the homework mostly. I mean, he's going to for Matt, Brittany and I to do it is too much work, but he's going to share with us your homeworks. But he's going to do the work of reading through them and commenting and having a conversation with you about your answers and things like that. So I want you to meet him and see him. He's a very nice guy. So.